are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. Interesting day when a new Coen Brothers movie is out because, well, do you remember the time when Coen Brothers could absolutely do no wrong? When every movie they put out was like, this is gonna be good. And then there were a few missteps along the way. And there have been a few films along the way as well that have been like, okay, there are people who really love this, and then there's me. But even some of their most like celebrated films, I have mixed feelings about that came later. Like, what's
A Simple Man?
No, but that was okay, once again.
Yeah, I mean, that one was one that everybody loved, and I thought was
good. No Country for Old Men, which I think is one of their best movies, until all of a sudden it isn't.
Yeah.
At the very end, I was like, what was that shit?
I'm actually one of those people who still think that Everything New is consistently good.
Really?
Lady Killers.
You see, and I was one of the people who thought, you know what? Everybody hates this, and this ain't bad.
I mean,
it's just not great.
It's their lowest point for me is Intolerable Cruelty, which
on a rewatch, I found that charming.
I never really dug Burn After Reading, and a lot of people get on me for that. Just never clicked.
I like that one. That was kind of a return to form for me, but the new one is them doing something genuinely different. Okay, sure, it's got a bunch of Western themes in it, so not that different. But what it is an anthology film called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. And reviewing this is me, Chris.
Marco.
Ben.
And Alan.
And it was odd. Originally, apparently, this was like being marketed by news sites, apparently incorrectly, I just found out, as something they were originally going to do as a TV show for Netflix, an anthology show. Apparently, that was never the case.
Well, it sure feels like that at times.
But it was sold that way to the public, and as it turns out, no, it was always going to be a movie for being released through Netflix. Of course, it's a Coen Brothers movie, which means it's going to get a theatrical release first.
Right.
So, it's coming out on Netflix November 16th.
Not too far.
Yeah, not too far. But this collection of stories here, six chapters, the title is just the title of the first one, which is, as one of you guys pointed out, should have really been called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs
and Other stories. Yeah.
Even though the book we see that's sort of like the frame device is they're paging through this book with a bunch of color plates, says it on the book.
School Western book you got like in your middle school library somewhere or something.
But you've got, and let me just, before we talk about opinion about these, let me just go through like briefly what each one is. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is Tim Blake Nelson as the singing cowboy. But one who also apparently is like the ultimate badass.
Yeah, he's kind of like, yeah, the sort of Roy Rogers hop along singing cowboy, only a little psychotic.
Yeah.
And a Sam Peckinpah movie.
Yeah.
But who's breaking the fourth wall the entire time? Yeah. You've got Nir Algodones, is that right?
Algodones.
With James Franco as a cowboy who tries to rob a very small in the middle of nowhere bank run by Stephen Root and finds out he's gotten much more than he bargained for. You've got Meal Ticket with Liam Neeson and Harry Melling. That's Harry Melling is Dunstan?
Dudley. Harry Potter.
Dudley from Harry Potter, who is a man with no arms and no legs, who is a orator, which is to say he goes in front of crowds in the Old West and basically reads out, speaks in dramatic voice, everything from the Bible to Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
I mean, it beats pushing a hoop with a stick. That's everything else they had.
Liam Neeson playing his sort of like his handler, I guess. There's All Gold Canyon with Tom Waits as a like elderly prospector who's just found a really bucolic, beautiful little spot where he's thinking he's found a gold vein. And then there's The Girl Who Got Rattled with Zoe Kazan playing a, not widowed, what do you call it when your brother suddenly dies?
So she's basically an orphan. She has no family.
Yeah, she has no family. She's on the Oregon Trail, quite literally, although no one gets dysentery. It's dysentery. It's cholera.
You have died of cholera.
And she's stuck in a position where she finds that basically the guy who her brother hired was promised an outrageous amount of money. And when he died, it turned out they accidentally buried him with the money several miles back. And she kind of forms a friendship with Bill Heck, who is one of the writers on the thing, who is like, she's begging him for help. And then the last story is The Mortal Remains, which is Interesting group of people, Tyne Daly, Brendan Gleeson, Jonjo O'Neill, Saul Rubinek, and Chelsea Ross, who all couldn't be more different from each other, who are riding on the stagecoach and having a very interesting and varied conversation that leads to a rather, perhaps metaphorically, morbid end.
Yeah. It's like Stagecoach if it had been written by Jean-Paul Sartre.
Yeah, it is John Ford's No Exit. That's it. And these things, like in any anthology film, your mileage may vary based on what they are. They're all very different tonally. There's certainly not anything that connects these except A, the Wild West, B, that ever-present level of Coen Brothers odd.
And their arch dialogue.
Yeah. And then there's a lot in here where there's a lot of moments where you're like, oh, you're actually talking about things now, in a way. You're making a statement, but most of the statements about sort of our world that are being coached through these scenarios are, I noticed, extremely curmudgeonly.
Well, I mean, come on. Let's face it. The Coen brothers have never exactly had the greatest view of humanity.
No.
And if you are of any at all familiar with their canon, you're going to pretty much come to that conclusion that they view human beings pretty dimly. Most human beings are horrible people, and even the best of them usually aren't that bright or have to suffer some horrible consequences on account of the decisions they make. What is strong about this, all of these little segments, is that they're all, as you said, they're all very different. It's almost like the Coen brothers challenge themselves to go, hey, we've got this sort of canvas and we can tell six stories. Let's make them all as wildly and tonally different as possible.
Or as Ben and I were suppositioning, perhaps they'd been trying for a while to come up with a new Western and had a big box full of ideas.
That's exactly
that they couldn't quite flesh out to a full movie.
Let's just make them all.
Let's just make them into an anthology.
And who knew they were so good at making short films.
Sure.
These are great shorts.
They very well understand the tropes of the Western, and they nailed the different style or different trope they're going for in each one, because each one definitely is a different Western story you've seen, done with their twist and their eye on it. Some, as Chris said, sometimes for better or for worse, but I think overall, for being six different stories, I'd say all six are relatively strong. Even the weakest one is still an entertaining story. It just may feel like you wanted more or you wanted less.
It depends on what kind of movie or Western you like. I mean, certainly I think the darkest thing here is Meal Ticket, which is,
yeah.
I found actually kind of navel-gazy and like overlong for what it was. And kind of like, Jesus Christ, dude, that was fucking bleak.
It felt really long because of how bleak it was.
Yeah.
I don't know what its runtime was compared to other ones, but that was the one that I felt like, God, I gotta get out of this one. It's killing me. But, like, I loved it, but it was very bleak.
Well, it came after two of the lightest ones in the whole series, too. And then it goes that bleak, and it gets very hard for you to change that gear as hard as it wants you to.
Yeah, I mean, and this movie makes I thought, an odd decision to, like, launch with the strongest, which is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Is delightful. It's so laugh-out-loud funny. It's just, you just wanted it to keep going. And when it's over, you're like, no, please,
to
keep going.
I actually thought they started off intentionally with the archest, most blatantly stylized and over the top one. And then the stories get more naturalistic as it goes forward, both visually and in tone. And then you end up with this sort of metaphysical piece at the end. It was a smart choice, I think, because it's like, let's start off with like the showstopper. It's like, if you aren't, you know, you're not going to be bored. That's going to hook you in. And then it kind of goes into these sort of more ponderous ones. I mean, really, one episode is just Tom Waits for 90% of the story by himself. He carries it.
And an owl.
And an owl. and a digital antelope that you actually had to squint a few times to realize it was digital. I'm like, that was pretty good. But it's one of those things where you're right, Chris. Your mileage is going to vary. I personally thought every one of these episodes was strong. The issue is that it never really feels like it becomes more than the sum of its parts.
Agreed.
Individually, they're all great. You could shuffle these around. You could almost add an extra episode or two and just release these as two films. I'm curious if Netflix is going to reformat them. Now, apparently, you're saying they're not. But the way up here, I kept thinking, you know, Are they going to do this thing where it's just going to be like an individual episode and you can just watch one at a time?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
is it just going to be one movie?
It's just released as one movie.
Because I almost wish, and it's a bummer that it's going to Netflix. No, not so much that they were longer. I almost wish I had this on DVD so I could do a fast forward to like do a chapter jump to see the episode that I want to see again.
I will say, I think the most, it's a really strong segment, the final one, the Mortal Remains, but it also is a little baffling. And I think that because it seems like it's trying very hard to be the linchpin that ties together, together all the rest, but I'll be damned if I can figure out exactly what they were going after.
I would say, I think, well, speaking on that and with the like big boisterous opening we have, it's like classic Coen brothers of subverting expectations. Like, they do it again and again with the movie you expect from them. They go to whimsical to really dark. And I really, even halfway through that movie, I already loved that they started with that and got there where we were. And ended with that one, because I think the through line of all the Coen brothers movies is, like, nihilism, and it's funny. Like, nothing matters, and that's hilarious. Not nothing matters, let's be sad. And I think that end point, like, it's, you know, similar to No Country for Old Men, the way that movie ends, or how many of the movies end. It's just like, what the hell? This movie just abruptly ends, and none of this that we watched has any bearing on this ending because nothing matters. And this movie is kind of rough at that point because when you watch a Coen Brothers movie, you go through the ups and downs of it, and you get to that end, and it's a little baffling. This has six of those because there's six Coen Brothers endings that kind of just halt or are weird or out of place. And that could be a little taxing if you're not a Coen Brothers fan necessarily. Sure. If you love it, I think you'll love it. If you love the Coen Brothers.
It's weird. They all have kind of downer endings except for the one you're sure is going to, which is the Tom Waits one, where I was like ready for this to be. In fact, it even teases you with it.
Well, you see, I wasn't even going to go there because I think I wasn't even going to mention that because you're right. That's the only one that kind of affirming.
I think the messaging of that story is still pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Like with the way it begins.
You see what's going to happen to that beautiful location.
Our protagonist doesn't have it the worst, but the, you know. Like,
the environment is basically fucked.
Like, yeah.
Damn.
Like, I will say, I think the dark ending, you know, the Coen Brothers twist kind of ending, I think it works best for the gal who got rattled.
Yeah.
I'm like, that feels like kind of a new age Western type of ending where it's like, yeah, you thought you had, you know, feels like people going through strife and it's like, then you don't always get what you want. They also, throughout the series, when they're going to the next story, they tease it with a, you know, an old ink press picture, an old press picture inside the book. It's like, oh, it's a gorgeous piece of art. And there's this line, and you wonder, well, how's that going to fit into the story?
Yeah, as they say, the color plates.
The color plates are gorgeous.
And those are great. And then that one, definitely the way they tease it at the beginning of the movie or beginning of that segment is really interesting. It's wonderful, actually, I think is one of my favorite parts of this, is how they tease you a little bit on your way in to try to figure out, what type of story will this be?
But they all do, to some degree or another, subvert your expectations, certainly. Sure. Some much more than others.
I would say the gal who got rattled was my favorite, maybe because that did subvert some of my expectations.
That was my favorite.
And it's also the most...
I think it's the longest.
Too. It's the longest, and it feels like it's the one that could have been a feature.
Yeah.
And that it does have some human connections in it.
You have this great actor, Granger Hines, who's in that one.
Oh, God.
Playing Mr. Arthur, who of the two writers, Billy and Mr. Arthur, he's very taciturn. He barely speaks in more than grunts, but Billy is constantly referring to him as just this great guy.
Yeah.
And then in the last third of that,
you see
he gets to totally dominate the story and be amazing. You're like, wow.
I thought this was just a side character. And then you realize, he's earned that reputation.
I kept wondering why an actor as recognizable as him was playing this role with almost nothing to do. And they were like, you go.
It's extremely satisfying. That was my favorite of the series. Yeah.
Well, definitely also Zoe Kazan. I always loved her. And I was wondering what she was going to be doing after the Big Sick. Cause I'm like, I think you were so great in that. What are you going to do next? And definitely this role it requires her to be a lot more taciturn than she is in most every other performance she has.
Right.
She is a woman in the West. She doesn't know her place in the world. And then, too, it's like the transformation of that character over time. She really does kind of help show that character kind of coming out of her shell, and she has to be her own human and be her own adult.
Yeah.
And then the Coen brothers shit all over it because fuck humanity. I mean, really, I mean, it hurts. And it's like The Mist, only instead of interdimensional demons, they're Comanche.
That's kind of where, like, I agree with you that in terms of that.
It takes the brave ending.
That's my second favorite. But I just love that opening. It's such a wonderful little bit of meta, wink, wink, Western comedy. And we haven't seen anything like that work.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a long, long, not since maybe Blazing Saddles have we seen actually work. And I was just having the time of my life watching it play.
Yeah, I think that first segment, even though The Girl Got Rattled is my favorite, I think, that first segment is probably the funnest 20 minutes I've had.
Oh, yeah.
It is this front to back, like the moment it starts to it ends, it is
the best Clancy Brown cameo you can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, and then then he goes into some borderline. I mean, it goes more than borderline. It goes into Looney Tunes territory at some point. I mean, it's Tex Ritter meets Tex Avery, and it is hard to beat. I mean, the problem with it is, as Chris said, I don't think it's the strongest in terms of being the best, but certainly in terms of just grabbing your attention, it becomes a very tough act to follow. This is quite a...
And lots of interesting cameos along the way. David Krumholtz is also in that first one, playing kind of a funny little part. Not much to do, but it's a funny little part. Willie Watson plays the kid in that, who's a famous folk singer.
Right, exactly.
Like we mentioned already, Stephen Root, of course, has a wonderful little role in the shortest one, Near Algodones, which is quite funny, but also kind of like you really expected it to go on longer.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, that was it?
I felt like it was mostly there for one.
It had one jack.
Yeah.
Gag.
But it was a good one.
It was a good one. Yeah.
I mean, and Ralph Ineson, you know, just always showing up in these little parts. And I'm like, after The Witch, I kept thinking, when is this guy going to get big roles? But he keeps showing up in little roles in big movies, so I'm glad to see him.
And Tom Waits, of course, who is almost always a pleasure to watch on screen.
I mean, no exception here.
Prospector's almost like, if you're going to put him in a Western, him being an old prospector is like typecasting now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could become the Walter Brennan of this generation.
Right. You know?
he's like, we need an old grizzled coot. I know, let's call Tom Waits.
All right, let's get a final thoughts. Alan, start us off.
I am a big Coen Brothers fan through and through. I think they've kind of started to become underrated of late, like, because they're so consistently great that unless it's, like, out of this world great, it's like, that was okay. But if any other, if, like, a first-time director made this, we would be losing our minds.
Yeah.
Like, how insanely fun and good it was.
Their weakest effort is other people's best.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that in mind, like, I put it right up there with, like, you know, pick your poison if you're Coen Brothers movie. Like, everyone has their favorite types. I love them all. Like, and if you like the Coen Brothers, you're going to love this movie. I'm going full on 10 out of 10 Coen Brothers.
Oh, damn.
I loved it.
Wow. Okay. I wish I could give it a 10 out of 10. The only 10 out of 10 for me in the Coen Brothers oeuvre is probably Miller's Crossing. But that's my favorite Coen Brothers. But again.
Do you see the Coen Brothers recently said a statement? We're really sick and tired of having you guys come up to us and tell us Fargo is your favorite movie.
No. See, everyone's Fargo. And I'm like, no, dude, Miller's Crossing is one I can rewatch anytime. I am kind of with Chris on this in that, you know, I liked all of these individually. It is a bit of a slog after a while having to sit through them. I mean, it's a long movie and each individual piece is fine, but I would almost prefer to watch this on Netflix if they did it as episodes. I'm like, oh, every night I'm going to see a new Coen Brothers short film.
Sure.
That I think would have been perfect for this. Unfortunately, I'm kind of inclined to tell you to wait until it comes out on Netflix because it's going to be there soon. But I will say this is a beautiful film to look at. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cinematography on this is gorgeous. The location work is magnificent. And for that reason alone, it is, I forget the name of the director of photography, but for that purpose alone.
Bruno Del Bonnell.
Yeah. I mean, I just assumed it was going to be Deakins or somebody like that, but this guy makes each episode different and beautiful. And seeing it on the big screen is a pleasure because you do not get to see these kind of landscapes very often.
Amelie,
there you go. Who would have known? This is beautiful. So for that reason alone, it's worth going to the theater. Unfortunately, as I said, it never becomes greater than the sum of its parts. I give this 7.5 out of 10 pan shots.
Ben, what about you?
So we kind of covered a lot of things. I do want to say I think I like the Mortal Remains a little bit better than everyone else here. The last sequence of the film. I think part of that is because I kind of feel like I found more of an answer to the ending than I think some of the rest of us found. But I gotta say, overall, definitely it is a fantastic set of short films, as Marco has said. I definitely think it is a great series, even when it's at its weakest. You know, you can still find either great performances or, at very least, a lot of heart to the story, even if it's not necessarily the heart you're wanting to be seeing. Right? as somebody goes with a armless, legless boy through town to town. And yeah.
That sounded that's, like a Tom Waits song.
That's
the whole
not,
thing was a Tom Waits
that's
song.
That's not going to end well, by yeah. definition.
Oh, no, yeah. Exactly. Hey, the chicken came out pretty okay.
Yeah, the chicken is fine. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, overall, I really
until he
it.
Meets a better chicken.
This chicken does long division. Okay.
Fucking new math.
I talked to my dad, you know, on the way over here for recording because he's a big Western fan. He was really excited for this. I was like, look, you'll love this. You know, definitely at least catch it on Netflix because it's gorgeous. It's some really good stories, and it's just a lot of fun for the most part. I give it 8.5 out of 10 presidential dogs.
Yeah, I did have a good time with this, and as much as I think that like some are much stronger than others, overall, I think this is a very solid, enjoyable piece. No, there isn't a lot of, at least not overtly, connection between any of these, even as much as I feel like the ending piece was trying to, which is certainly the most oblique of all of them. They're all interesting in their own way. I honestly, though, I could have done without Meal Ticket. I could have completely had that excise from here. It would have been fine.
I can agree with that.
I was like, I'm just not a fan of that piece. I thought it was needlessly morbid and throughout its entirety, and just there just wasn't much to it. And it was basically just them shaking their fingers at society and going, how dare you like superhero movies instead of are the things that we do? That's what it felt like to me. It was there. How dare you not like cheap entertainment over art? Which obviously is already crippled to begin with. Anyway, good movie. A very good movie. I was hoping for a great movie, and I don't think they quite achieved greatness, but it is very good, and I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 times I wondered where the fuck is Jeff Bridges in this thing. Because weren't you all thinking it? You were just, every time there was an old guy with a beard, you're like, is that Jeff Bridges? He's in Coen Brothers movies, and that's pretty much all he plays anymore.
He's tagged True Grit at the end of this, and we got really long.
Right? That was the final sequence.